Federal, state and territory Indigenous affairs ministers and peak organisations are set to sign off this month on revised Closing the Gap targets for the next decade. Today's meeting of the Joint Council on Closing the Gap will consider the first refresh of the targets since their introduction in 2008. The latest report shows that five of the seven aspirations were not on track. Ken Wyatt is the Federal Minister for Indigenous Australians and he joins us this morning in our Parliament House studios. Welcome back to Breakfast, Minister.
Good morning, Geraldine. Great to be with you.
Yes, look, the original Closing the Gap targets expired in 2018 and you won't have new targets in place until next year. I suppose people might say, why has it taken 3 years to get to this stage? Surely improving the life expectancy of Indigenous people or getting them to stay in schools should be a bigger priority?
No, they still remain a significant priority. We've not changed our position on that. What's important this time is that we have revisited all of the targets, but we've worked with 51 Aboriginal peak organisations to have their input into what the target should be, what are the components and elements of those targets, and how we hold all of us now accountable in a way that we've not done. But state and territory parliaments and the Commonwealth will all deliver their own reports on what they have achieved in respect to the targets. They're stretch targets, but there's a great deal of enthusiasm and commitment from ministers for Aboriginal affairs. And in our ongoing discussions with my co-chair, Pat Turner, we've found the enthusiasm to be refreshing, but also the commitment to working with Aboriginal people, not doing things to them.
Which, as Pat Turner absolutely emphasises, should be the key thing that is taken into this century. You are promising ambitious new targets. You say stretch targets. What are they?
Well, they're in all of the same key areas, but we've included incarceration and out-of-home care. Those are two very important areas. There was talk around parity, but those parity pushes are not supported by the Commonwealth nor by ministers. And certainly in my discussions with Pat, the leaked document which shows that, they will not be there. We are working towards achieving tangible outcomes that are real and will deliver change.
Now, just develop that a bit. So you're wary, are you, of, in effect, over-ambition because you think that leads to disappointment? Obviously, that has piqued you, that notion of parity.
Well, when you put parity dates out to 30, 73 years away, you won't achieve those because what you do is you create the mindset, oh, we've got plenty of time to achieve that. So that comes out of the equation. What we are doing is saying, here are the targets, we're ambitious, we're going to work towards them. And what we did in education when I worked in that area is we set targets and we worked towards them. But if we achieved a shift from, say, 47% to 51, we celebrated the gain. And then we said, right, next year we'll aim for another 5%. And we've seen that outcome result in more Year 12 students exiting and entering the tertiary pathway. So in talking with my colleagues from all sides, we're very excited about the prospect of celebrating and not looking at the deficits. We'll look at the gains.
Yes, I think this is terribly important too. But so you feel that it can be demoralising, do you? Like you look at the child mortality and the life expectancy rates, and they are appalling for every single state sort of thing. But there are other very, very promising ones, particularly on education. So can you just explain to us what it does to Indigenous communities to not reach targets? The broader community, I think, thinks it's good to sort of focus on them. I clearly get different messages from Indigenous communities.
Well, when you constantly fail, you develop a sense of futility. I've heard people in our community and in my own family who say, well, look, we're never going to live to the same length of time as a non-Indigenous Australian, so I may as well enjoy myself, and harmful behaviours are part of that. When we say no, if you change those practices, and let me say Tom Kelmer with the cigarette smoking or the smoking campaign has had an incredible impact in convincing the number of Indigenous people to reduce their smoking. Alcohol, only 19% of our people imbibe in alcohol, but the trouble is it's public, so there's this broad perception. So there are things that are making a difference, and we are living longer. I'm seeing 87-year-old Indigenous family members, which I've never seen before.
And who do you think needs to hear this message? Because how is it to achieve that at the same time as those terrible figures, particularly about child mortality? You know, it's obviously a real dance that somehow Aboriginal leaders have to perform to encourage people to keep trying.
And let me say that the Indigenous leadership has been at the forefront of wanting to see the improvements, and they're making incremental gains at the community level. And there are aberrations right across the country where the results are extremely good, the outcomes are tremendous. But when you aggregate nationally, then you have this median point at which the results are not reflecting where gains are being made. The maternal child health program done by the Aboriginal community controlled health organisations and state and territory governments has seen an incredible improvement in the birth weight of babies, mothers attending sessions to look at what they have to do to develop better pathways for their children, not only in health but education and elsewhere. And we're seeing that occur with the high rates of Indigenous children now engaging in early childhood.
One of the goals relates to incarceration, such an important area, reducing Indigenous adults in the prison system by 15% over the next 10 years and achieving parity by 2093. That's pretty devastating, isn't it? Isn't that in some ways just kicking the can down the road?
No. Take that. That parity date is not supported by anybody. It was suggested and put into the leaked report.
Right.
That is not the basis for our discussions today. We will have targets that we will focus on and we'll work to achieve them. WA, for example, have just introduced legislation now that if you have an outstanding fine, you won't go into prison. They'll have other means of dealing with that. So that'll reduce the incarceration rates, particularly of Indigenous women in WA. Victoria has got something in the pipeline that they were sharing with me. So jurisdictions are looking at the incarceration rates, and it's been great that they have accepted that these now have to be a strong component within the agreement. It means that they will turn their attention to what are the inputs that prevent people going in, but also we will be looking at the exit points when people come out in respect to accessing health, but creating some career opportunities, particularly for our youth.
Yes. I mean, back in 2016, at a National Press Club address, Senator Pat Dodson said some quite alarmingly, says the rate at which Indigenous people are imprisoned has more than doubled over the last 25 years. It was marking the 25th anniversary of the Deaths in Custody report. At the time of the Royal Commission, some 14% of those in custody were Indigenous. Today, it's around 27%, in spite of the Commission's recommendation that prison be a measure of last resort. So that was only 4 years ago he said that. That is depressing, isn't it?
It is, and that's why it's now one of the preeminent targets that we will do a lot of work around. And in talking with my state and territory colleagues, there's a strong commitment to now looking at addressing them. When I talked to the WA minister, one of his priorities is to reduce the incarceration rates for both adults and youth, but recognising that there are people who do commit crimes that do have to do the time, but also, we need to look at how effective are the programs we have in place for them whilst they're in incarceration. So there's a whole range of factors that will now be considered by all of us very seriously.
The reality is there's no new money linked to this agreement, is there? How will things change without not just renewed goals but real money?
Well, there is an acceptance that there is sufficient funding in a number of programs. It's how effective are we using it, and we're having that discussion. And certainly, as we go into the forward years, where we need interventions, then certainly all of us would look at our state and territory and Commonwealth systems for intervention programs that require budgets to make sure that we achieve the closure of those gaps. But the other thing, Geraldine, is in this approach, every portfolio that governments have will
state
have to be involved.
State and territory too, isn't it?
Oh, state and territory, yes. Mm. We're all accountable now. It's not just the Commonwealth, because it's the Commonwealth who's been doing the parliamentary reporting. But in the new agreement, the state and territory ministers have agreed that they will report in their own parliaments on what they've achieved against the targets as well.
So do you detect, I wonder, whether there are a whole range of Indigenous people stepping up, leaders, because there's sort of, you know, grossly overstretched most Indigenous leaders, there are about 15 boards, who are really becoming systemically clever, if I can put it like that, so that they do understand exactly how money flows and how, you know, targets get made and how it flows through locally. Is that coming?
Oh, that's evident. Let me say, during COVID-19, right across the nation, I connected every day with leaders. What really blew me away was the way in which young leaders, elders, and established leaders all combined to make sure that COVID did not impact on the Aboriginal community. Because when you think of 800,000, and we only had 61 cases, and yet we are vulnerable in every aspect of life, we would have expected a higher outcome, but the leadership and the organisations worked extremely close in their services and the way in which they shifted resources to make sure that they had interventions that prevented COVID-19.
And maybe there were some real lessons learned during that. You know, never waste a good crisis, as they say.
No, absolutely. And look, I was extremely proud of the leadership and how it stood up. And I think in this instance, that'll translate into the work that we're now doing on the targets, because once you have that combined effort, it doesn't go away. So we will harness the way in which our leadership play an important part in all of this as well, along with the 51 peaks.
You sound quite heartened.
I am. For the first time, I've heard a bounce in the voice of our leaders. I've heard a bounce in the voices of ministers that are involved. Yesterday, I spent the morning, the day before, I spent the morning talking to all of the state and territory ministers, and the level of enthusiasm is something I've not heard from a ministerial forum, as I did through those telephone conversations, and certainly in our meeting in Adelaide. Totally different interaction altogether, and the commitment to wanting to work with Aboriginal people was extremely evident.
Mm. Very good to hear. Thank you very much for joining us.
No, it's a pleasure, Geraldine.
Ken Wyatt, the Federal Minister for Indigenous Australians, and later today he'll be chairing the meeting of the Joint Council on Closing the Gap.